Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and if you're looking to clear some sonic space for yourself, you know, a little peace and quiet in our noisy lives, you might not immediately think punk rock. But the forthcoming exhibit on punk and its impact on the fashion industry will be opening this week at the Metropolitan Museum. So really, how loud can it be? No, that's not from the Met's punk exhibit. This little burst of noise came from Iggy Pop and his reunited band, The Stooges. They did a special live public radio show on Sunday afternoon, and we'll give you a taste of something old and something new from the proto-punk star. And we'll ask what it means for punk when the Met Museum comes calling. Now, if you really want some peace and quiet, you could just listen to Iron and Wine, the band led by Sam Beam. His new album's a bit of a departure. It's full of big arrangements, has a lively 70s soul feel, but in our studio today, it's just Sam Beam, playing that spare solo music that made Iron and Wine such a cult favorite in the first place. And of course, you can find other ways to clear out some of the noise from your life. That's our question of the week this week on Soundcheck, and after all, people have been doing that for years, centuries even, maybe even longer. A recent BBC 4 radio series called Noise, A Human History, has been examining how noise has shaped civilization for the past, 100,000 years. Professor David Hendy is the host and writer of that series, which wrapped up last week, and he joins me now from the BBC studios in Oxford, England. David, welcome.
Thank you.
Not too ambitious, eh? A 100,000-year history of sound?
Yeah, it's fairly ambitious, I suppose, and it's also, many people think, a fool's errand. How do you tell us a history of sound when sound disappears the moment it's born?
And we've only had recording since the 19th century, so how much do we know about the history of noise?
Well, it's certainly true that the further back in time you go, the more you have to make educated guesses. But actually, sound does leave traces. You can go back to, say, the memoirs and the diaries of some of the colonists who, from Europe, settled in North America in the 16th, 17th centuries. And they write very, very vividly. They describe the sound worlds that they found, the sound of Native Americans, the sounds that they were making themselves. So a lot of travellers have always been struck, not just by what they see when they visit new lands, but what they hear.
Now, it's curious, David, to hear you use the word sound as opposed to noise in the last couple of moments. How do you distinguish between sound and noise?
Well, I find it creatively interesting to blur the boundaries a little bit, because it's true that, generally speaking, noise is the equivalent in sound of how we've defined dirt. We've defined dirt as matter out of place. In other words, it doesn't belong there. And noise, in a sense, is a sound that someone somewhere doesn't really like or want to be heard. But of course, it's also subjective. That's not to say that there's no such thing as noise and that all sounds are always lovely. But it's certainly the case that in history, if you just condemn everything as noise, it tends to mean that you're not necessarily listening to it. And it's interesting that the powerful in history have often condemned the weak or the alien or the strange or the unfamiliar, the foreign, as noisy. And, you know, there are examples of that all the way through history, right up to the present day. So I think it's useful to talk about noise and to talk about sound, but we have to really get to grips with why it is that some sounds are described as noise and others aren't.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with David Hendy, Professor of Media and Communication at the University of Sussex in England. He's creator of the 30-part BBC Four radio series, Noise, A Human History. And so how far back can we find evidence of people trying to do what we're talking about this week on Soundcheck, which is to clear a space, to escape from noise?
Well, I suppose one of the clearest early examples is an ancient city that in many ways was the New York of its time, a cultural melting pot of a million people, and that's ancient Rome. In ancient Rome, noise was a problem. It wasn't the first city with a problem of noise, but it was the first major city where noise involved rules and law, and people were writing vividly about it. This was the center of a great empire. Mm-hmm. Goods were constantly arriving, travelers and so on. And a lot of goods were delivered at night. In fact, for many years in the Roman Empire, goods couldn't be delivered during the day. They were always delivered at night. So sleep was a problem. If you were wealthy and if you were part of the Roman elite, you would flee the center of the city and you would live amongst the imperial class on the Palatine Hill. Yeah. So ancient Rome had it, and then if you follow through the Middle Ages, people with money and power would always be able to, in a sense, insulate themselves from noise through thicker walls or housing further away from the city centers.
That's fascinating. So sound or protection from noise as a kind of status symbol, as a marker of where you were.
It was a marker. And of course, the more that happened, the more that you as a wealthy, powerful person could create an environment of quiet, the more it was that noise itself came to be seen as vulgar.
Right.
So you get into this vicious circle, of you've escaped from sound yourself that irritates you, but you don't actually become more tolerant of it when you go out. You become less and less tolerant of it. It's more and more offensive to your ears.
Soundcheck listeners, that's our question to you this week. How do you block out noise in your day-to-day life? You can't flee to the Palatine Hills, presumably, but where do you go? What do you do to create a quiet space? You can leave us a voicemail, 866-939-1612, or leave a comment on soundcheck.org or tweet us at soundcheck. The number again, 866-939-1612. We're speaking with Professor David Hendy, host and writer of the series Noise, A Human History. There's a companion book coming out here in the States this fall, also called Noise, A Human History of Sound and Listening. What about sounds that are present but perhaps just at the threshold of audibility? I'm thinking here in the States of the 60-cycle hum of electricity, I guess 50 cycles there for you. I mean, it's there. It surrounds us. It's a pervasive part of our life. And yet somehow we sort of walk through this field of sound without even noticing it's there.
We do. And one of the really interesting things about sound is that we have two responses to it. One is hearing it and one is listening to it.
Mm.
We change our mode of response. And I suppose the classic example is background music, for example, which again, a lot of people would regard as an unpleasant and pervasive feature of 20th and 21st century living.
Mm-hmm.
That burble of music that plays in shopping malls and cafes and so on. We are capable of zoning out from that, but we're also capable, recall maybe being in a party where there's a lot of chatter and you're standing next to someone and actually you're listening to someone else who's just to one side. Your ears are able, or of course it's your brain, is able to distinguish between some sounds and other sounds and to zone out of other ones. So we have very clever means of managing sound. And in fact, if we had total silence, it is very, very uncanny and very unsettling. And that's why, for instance, various studies show that what's the perfect environment for, say, creative writing? It's not necessarily a silent monastery or a silent library. It's a cafe with a steady burble of sound. And what people are really after when they say they want silence is really the space to think. Mm-hmm. It's a place where there is a sort of a wallpaper of sound, an emulsion of sound, and that kind of low level, fairly continuous sound actually suits us really well. I think the other thing that I noticed in doing this series, I think, is that when we try to achieve silence, there are two dangers. One is that it involves silencing other people, mm-hmm. and there's a social cost for that. You've got to be very, very careful, because very often, you know, it is an act of the powerful against the weak. The other thing is that there's a danger that if we try to soundproof ourselves, we're also engaged in a social soundproofing. We're not really listening to other people or to the world around us. We cut ourselves off socially from fellow human beings. So there are, even though it's a natural instinct to search for quiet, I think we have to be aware of the costs that sometimes come along with that.
So we are asking our listeners all this week how they block out noise in our day-to-day lives, what we do to create a quiet space. Do you think we've gotten noisier as a species over the course of 100,000 years? And with that, have we developed better techniques for doing what we need to do for ourselves to create that sense of quiet?
I think it's very difficult to argue that the world isn't noisier now than it used to be. Inevitably, there's more traffic, there's more machinery, more people, more of everything. So in that sense, objectively, we must be in some sense in a noisier world. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't been a smooth and continuous process. When motor cars were first introduced in the early 20th century, they were regarded as a blessing because they were going to be an improvement. They were going to be quieter than the clattering of iron-rimmed carts pulled by horses on cobbled streets, which were incredibly noisy. And in the 20th century, technology has helped make things quieter. The technology of soundproofing, of reducing engine noise and vibration, and also progressive social legislation, health and safety legislation about delivery times and the times of day that noisy activities can be conducted, or quiet zones around schools and hospitals. So there were great achievements in the 20th century through legislation that made, in some respects, cities especially, more tolerant, less disruptive places. So it's not a simple story, I think, of the world becoming ever noisier and a less pleasant place to live.
We've been speaking with David Hendy, the professor of media and communication at University of Sussex in England and creator of the 30-part BBC4 radio series Noise, A Human History. The companion book, Noise, A Human History of Sound and Listening, will be available here in the States this fall. You can find a link to David's series on our website, soundcheck.org. David, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. We're going to be airing an excerpt from David Hendy's radio series, Noise, A Human History, later this week on Soundcheck. But in the meantime, we want you to tell us how you block out noise in your daily life. What do you do? Where do you go to create a quiet space? Leave us a voicemail, 866-939-1612, or leave a comment on our website, soundcheck.org, or tweet us, @soundcheck.